This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 384 of Shutters Inc., the Reg Vardy conundrum. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me from the middle of Victoria, Mr. David Marland. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good, Bruce. Yourself?
Excellent. Excellent.
It's good. Just a bit cold, chilly here.
Yeah?
It's been quite a cold beginning to spring. We think spring's forgotten us.
Oh, okay. We had exactly the opposite. You know, like the first day of spring up here was absolutely gorgeous. It was 27 degrees or something like that, and it was just beautiful. So,
you mean there can be numbers in front of the seven?
Yes, they can. They can. Now, last week, Glyn made the bold pronouncement that if you wanted an episode of the podcast dedicated in your name, that you should donate $10 to the PayPal account. And if you didn't want an episode dedicated to you, that you should donate $20. Reg Vardy went and donated $15, so I have no idea what he wants.
Well, we should dedicate the show to Reg.
Well, that's why I said the Reg Vardy conundrum. That's the name of the episode, because I don't know whether he did want or didn't want. He was halfway in between. So anyway, so thank you very much for the donation, Reg. Much appreciated, mate. Now, I just wanted to throw a shout out. Do I know a photographer in the Taree region on the mid-north coast of New South Wales? I had a feeling that there was somebody on my list of Facebook friends who was a photographer who was in Taree. It was a female who said to me, if you're ever up this way, come and do a shoot. And I cannot for the life of me think who it was. And I scoured my friend list today and couldn't put a name and a location together, so I have no idea who it was. So if they're still listening to this podcast, please let me know, because I'm thinking of heading up there in a couple of weeks for a shoot. Now, I need to make an apology for last week, and this all comes down to the whole 10-stop filter thing. And it occurred to me later, like, how did I even miss this? The fact that I actually said there are 7 stops between 1 second and 1 minute and between 100 ISO and 6400 ISO. So why the hell did I think this was going to work for a 10-stop filter? It was only over the week that has gone by since that I went to try and put this into practice, and all of the images, you know, where I'd gone to 6400 ISO and measured for 1 second, and I've then dialed it back to 100 ISO and gone, okay, I need that many minutes, all came out pitch black. And I'm going, what on earth is going wrong here? And then suddenly I sat down to draw it out on paper and went, hang on, that's only 7 stops, and this is a 10-stop filter.
10-stop filter, yes.
So I feel like I really need to go and scour YouTube to find the numbnut who's incorrect science I recited and point him straight if somebody hasn't already done so. But I can't believe I just took that at face value and didn't really think it through. It just seemed like such a beautiful way of calculating it that I guess I overlooked the fact that it was coming up 3 stops short. So if you had a 7-stop filter, it's a perfect way of working it out. But yeah,
that's right. You'd only need an ISO of 512,000.
I worked out that you'd need an ISO of 102,000 and whatever that stop is.
Oh yes, look, I've actually miscalculated. You're quite correct.
Yeah, but it's 6400.
64.
12,800. 25,600. I think it is. 51,200, yep. So 102, 100, yep. whatever that next stop is, that would be 10 stops above 100 ISO. And, of course, I don't have a camera that has an ISO that high, so I can't use that method to do it anyway. But I did find a really good app on the Google Play Store which does nothing but do calculations for using neutral density filters. So you put in the original shutter speed, you then dial up on a little rotating tumbler thing how many stop filter you want to use, and then you press the calculate button and it calculates, you know, that number of stops based on the original shutter speed and tells you the new shutter speed allowing for that many stops of neutral density. So very simple app, doesn't try to do anything else, that just does one job and does it beautifully. So I think that'll be what I rely on from here on out. I won't be relying on YouTube videos.
Well, about reliability of source. And Lee Filters actually put out an app for, and it matches their 10-stop, 6-top.
Oh, nice.
Filters as well. So
nice.
Same sort of principle. So there's a few out there, and that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah. So what have you been up to since I spoke with you last?
Well, it's been a while. We went to New Zealand and had a look at the South Island.
Nice.
My son's living over there, so we spent a bit of time in very cold Dunedin.
I was going to say, was this during the winter?
Just before winter, yep. And the snows sort of closed the roads and that about 3 weeks after we left.
Right, okay.
But then the 2 years before when we went there, it snowed in the middle of summer in January, February. Yeah, so right. It seems to snow down there all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, the interesting thing is trying to do travel photography, and I in one of the reviews I make some comments like this, but you might have experienced this as well, because when you are traveling and you're on the move, you get the weather you get.
Oh,
yes.
You
don't get much choice.
That's it.
You've got limited time, and you've got to try and balance up your photography with what you want to do on the trip and what your family's wanting to do and all that as well. So
totally.
You read some of the books on travel photography, and it's like they've got all the time in the world.
Yeah.
And that's okay if you've got a dedicated trip, but for most of us, you've got to try and balance all those things up. And I actually think it really tests your skills, because you may have very limited time to get a shot.
Definitely.
And if it's cruddy weather, you've got to use your imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think some of those books are probably written with the solo traveling photographer in mind, rather than, you know, guys of your and my vintage who are traveling with a family and, you know, as you say, you got all these other considerations that need to be taken into account. If you're traveling solo and you don't have anyone else to worry about, then you're at much more leisure to decide how long you want to devote to getting a shot. But, you know, for us mere mortals, that's not the way it plays out. So,
or you go to places like Portugal and that, where it's sunny all the time, you know what the weather's going to be like.
Well, we still copped some overcast weather. We were really fortunate, you know, in the whole 4.5 weeks that we were away, we copped a little bit of rain on the day we drove from Barcelona to Toledo, and then we copped a couple of showers, and I really mean they were only showers, like light showers, in Paris, it didn't even rain while we were in England. So that was it. Out of 4.5 weeks, you know, there were 2 days where we copped a little bit of rain, and one of those days was a driving day. So we were so fortunate.
Well, hang on a minute. No rain in England, and some people still think there's no such thing as climate change?
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Some exciting news that I was advised not to share this, so I'm going to share it, but with a caveat, right?
Don't tell anyone.
Exactly. Well, not so much don't tell anyone, but Darktable, which I've been using for 12 months now, which is native to Linux, but is also available on the Mac, is about to come to Windows. Now, at this point, there is a link, and the link will be in the show notes for anyone who feels, you know, the desire or the motivation to go and check it out. This link is very much probably just an alpha, not even a beta release at this point. So please bear that in mind. This is not a finished product, and I don't want anyone to go and download it and try it and go, oh, this is absolute crap, because it's not finished. So this is a preview release that they've put up. They've made public for anyone that wants to try it out. So I just wanted to make that perfectly clear that, Yes, it's going to still have some bugs to it, and maybe not all the features are there. I haven't looked at it myself because I'm quite happily running Darktable on Linux. And as I have said on this podcast over the last 12 months, there is a bit of a learning curve to Darktable, you know. I think like any piece of software, you know, once you've spent enough time with it, it becomes very much second nature. You get used to the workflow. You develop a certain set of keystrokes that gets you through from one end to the other. And that takes a little bit of time to work up to, you know. And I think that's true of any software. And, so,
yeah, I was just going to say the word. In a way, the worst part about it is if you are using something frequently, you forget that you went through that learning curve too.
Yes.
So there's a whole lot of things that become automatic and you've forgotten that you had to step it through, particularly if you have to show somebody else at some stage.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm actually going through that at work at the moment where the audio software that I used for 8.5 years was taken away from me in April of this year. And I was forced onto a new piece of audio software, which I've used in the past and was never a fan of, and I'm still not a fan of. But yes, going through all that process again of having to, you know, map new neural pathways for all these keystrokes that are different and commands that are different. Plus, they shifted me from a Windows to a Mac system as well. So it's learning an operating system as well as a new software platform. So. Yes, I completely get what you're saying.
Good luck.
Yeah. Lexa, who we knew had gone into receivership, has been acquired by a Chinese flash storage company called Longsys. Longsys announced this on their website or released a press release over the last week announcing that they had acquired Lexa and will be continuing to release flash media products with the Lexar brand. So hopefully their quality is as good as Lexar always was. Do you know where Lexar was based, David?
No, not at all.
Right, no, me either.
It just says it was from Micron, so that's I don't know where the original company was.
Yeah, it Micron was the original owner, yeah.
Yeah, so, that's right.
So it's, you know, look, hopefully it's a good thing for Lexar customers that, you know, the brand will continue, so hopefully that will mean that the, you know, professional support and, you know, data recovery services and all that sort of thing that would have been offered by Micron when they were running Lexar, all that stuff will be picked up by Longsys and carried on. So, yeah, it's good to hear that they're not completely disappearing.
That's right, at the reforming.
Yeah. Now, as most people on this podcast, or listeners to this podcast would know, I work for the Australian Radio Network, and the Australian Radio Network used to be 50% owned by Clear Channel, which is a large American media conglomerate. And Clear Channel in the US owns a brand of streaming media called iHeartRadio, which a few people would be familiar with. And when they were still our parent company, a deal was struck that the Australian Radio Network would manage the iHeartRadio brand here in Australia. Now, I don't know, it's probably 2 years gone by now, I guess, that Clear Channel sold their 50% share of Australian Radio Network to Australian provincial newspapers. And part of the separation deal was that the iHeartRadio brand would continue to be managed by the Australian Radio Network for a period of time. And as such, that has meant that, you know, as an employee of the Australian Radio Network, I have some fairly close ties with iHeartRadio. And as anyone who follows me on Facebook would know, I now record and mix all of the acoustic sessions that occur with artists who come into the radio station. And we do, you know, acoustic sessions for iHeartRadio. Well, I can happily announce this week that iHeartRadio has just announced its podcasting platform. And the guys at work said, hey, do you want your podcasts on iHeartRadio? I went, hell yeah, why not? So
we might get up to 8 listeners.
Yeah, exactly. So iHeartRadio Australia, which is iHeartRadio.com.au, actually, no, I'm just looking at the link. It's iHeart.com. How about that?
Making the big time.
So this would be the worldwide version of iHeart. Shutters Inc. is now in their podcasting platform. So if you are an iHeart listener and for whatever reason you need a new place to listen to Shutters Inc., you can now find it on the iHeart platform. So pretty excited about that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I came across a few stories this week. This one, a photographer finds locations of 1960s postcards to see how they look today. And the difference is unbelievable. Have you had a look at any of these pictures, David?
I've just looked at a few and it's just utterly amazing.
It is phenomenal. What really blows me away is how whoever did this has managed to not only find the exact location, but to also match the focal length of the original images.
Yes.
They've done a brilliant job. If you follow the link that will be in the show notes, this is a series of animated GIFs that essentially crossfade between the original image and the image as taken, you know, recently. And, yeah, he's done an amazing job of matching the focal length with the original images. There's one or two where positioning is just a little bit out, but they are really well done.
And you get the gist very easily, like something quite abandoned, you know, like a lovely restaurant that's just now abandoned.
Yeah.
You know, and a bowling alley with just rubbish strewn everywhere and clearly no longer functioning.
Yeah.
Yeah, just quite staggering. Yeah, it's interesting. When I was a kid, I must try and dig them up. I once walked through most of the intersections of Melbourne and took a photograph down the street.
Wow. Really?
And I must try and dig those. They weren't particularly good photos.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to do that sort of comparison. But that sort of stuff is just, I think it's priceless. It just shows, because those changes happen gradually, you know,
exactly.
Over time.
Exactly.
And you don't notice it day to day. So
it's funny, you know, because I always think about people that just walk around taking these random shots of places, you know, when it's the place they live in. And I think, why would you do that? You see it every day. Why would you bother photographing it? And it's only with that hindsight that, you know, 20 years down the track, it is going to look so different from the way it does today that you kind of see method in the madness.
Yeah, because it's just photographing the commonplace.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah, great series
well
of images. Definitely.
Yeah, fantastic.
The next one was man cops life ban for entering another photographer's image under his name. This was on AustralianPhotography.com. And this guy who goes by the name of Srirag S was exposed when AustralianPhotography.com published the August Reflections Photo Competition shortlist on Facebook. And the image that this guy had submitted was a nighttime shot of three zebras at a watering hole, obviously in Africa. And as soon as they've posted it up, somebody has posted in the comments, that looks very similar to the work of such and such from Italy. And they called him out on it. This the original photographer was Giovanni Frescura.
Frescura, yep.
And yeah, and it turned out this guy had submitted this image of Giovanni's and got shortlisted. And when he was called out on it, he came up with, I've got a lot of many pics from my friends and others. I believe someone might have uploaded by mistake. Nah,
yeah.
Not buying that.
Sorry, nice try. I guess the internet can be a very cruel place and you'll be caught out pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely.
It's fairly ruthless if you've been caught out doing something like that, a bit like that one we had some time ago, the guy with the jet flying over the ladder.
Yes.
You know, that was cool. People don't like that sort of behavior and good that it gets called.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The next one was on IFL Science, and it's check out this stunning 80 trillion pixel cloudless view of Earth. Now, I'll call BS on the cloudless bit because I did find parts of the planet that had little bits of cloud over them, but the couple of places that I zoomed in on were pretty much cloud-free. So it is a pretty amazing image. It's not quite as high res as Google Maps in the populated areas. So, you know, if you zoom in on, you know, any major city, Google Maps will allow you to get closer and get a higher res view. Where I think this comes into its own is in those areas where Google Maps doesn't go to such a high degree of resolution. This would probably be a slightly higher resolution in some of those areas. But yeah, it's an amazing view of the entire planet from satellites, and you can zoom right in and you can see a fair amount of detail. Like I said, not quite as much as Google Maps, but not far short of it.
They seem to have chopped Australia off, though.
In what way?
The east coast is missing, but maybe it's just the way...
Try zooming out. Use your wheel mouse to zoom out.
Okay, that'll be the... Good. Don't like being chopped off halfway. No. Looks like the line goes right through Ararat.
Right.
might account for the big gap on the other side of the road.
Yeah, so if you look over in the... you know, the southeastern corner of Australia, sort of out past Sale and up towards the border of New South Wales, you'll see there's a big stretch of cloud in there. But beyond that, the majority of it certainly is cloud-free. What I find interesting is that you can actually see the image tiles, and they're sort of at a, you know, 10 degrees off vertical. So you can obviously see the path that the satellite has taken. Can you see that?
Yes, I can see that. And the reason for that is because they've used a geosynchronous satellite.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually orbiting
yep.
north to south. And the reason they use those for global scanning
yep.
is because when you think about it, it's going around and around and stays in the same place and the world turns underneath it.
Right. Yep.
So every pass and things like Landsat and things like that, over a number of days, the paths all come together and it gives them a complete picture of the Earth.
Wow.
So, but the satellite is just on a single path going around the North and South poles as the Earth spins underneath it.
Yeah, right. So if I'm looking at these bands, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, around about 17 or 18 bands. So does that mean it took it about 17 or 18 days to map Australia?
Yeah, well, 17 or 18 passes. It just depends how long it takes for it to do that.
Wow. But
and the reason they're angled slightly to the northeast and southwest is because the Earth is turning as the satellite's passing overhead.
Yeah, right.
So that's why you get the angle, because it's the movement of the Earth. So that useless piece of science. But
No, that makes perfect sense.
Why it is. Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
And it's just a clever way, and because you don't have to put them into such a high orbit as geosynchronous, and the other bit, that means you get better resolution on the ground.
Right, okay.
Because they're closer.
Uh-huh. Very cool. So obviously the downside of this, as compared with Google Maps, is there are no, you know, there's no map view, you know, separate from the satellite view that's got place names and things that you can focus in on. You've just got to zoom down on the map view and work out where you are. But it's pretty cool nonetheless.
Yep. No, it's not bad.
Steve Peter sent us a couple of stories. The first one, rooftop photographer facing serious charges for climbing the Ben Franklin Bridge. I believe this is in New York. So this guy climbed up on this bridge and got busted at about 12:45 in the morning with his friends. And after he was taken into custody, all of his photography gear, including a Nikon D810, a 24-28, and a 70-200-28, was confiscated, and he's now unable to work as a freelancer due to not having any gear, which has put him in serious financial difficulty. But he's due to appear in court on September the 13th, which is any day now, and his friends have done a crowd fundraising campaign to try and cover his legal costs. But, yeah, I don't know where I stand on this.
It's great to get the imagination shot, but
yes,
people are concerned about the safety of other people.
Yep.
And it perhaps, had he contacted the authorities, he might have had a better chance of taking the photo with safety gear on and with assistance.
Possibly. No. They probably would have charged him for it and, you know, obviously doing it by himself without permission was not going to cost him anything. Had it all gone to his plan, which it didn't, and now it'll probably end up costing him a whole lot more.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a very difficult one with some of those.
I think, yeah, we've spoken in the past about, you know, as you say, you know, great to have the imagination to do these things, but bear in mind what could potentially go wrong if things don't go to plan.
Well, you know, if you slip, or worse still, if a small piece, say you do a lens change up there and the lens goes overboard.
Yeah.
And hits somebody.
Yeah.
It'll be speeding like a bullet on its way down.
Yeah.
And people forget that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even a nail or a rivet is traveling like a bullet when it hits the deck of the Sydney Harbour Bridge from the top. So,
yeah, right.
You know, you've got to take precautions and be careful about it. So it's not just the photographer. It's all those other things that could go wrong because sooner or later they do.
Yeah. The next one was a story about a news photographer in, where was this? Ohio, I think it was, who was shot by police who mistook his camera and tripod for a gun. Now, I don't know.
What?
I haven't watched the video that's on this page, but apparently this news photographer stopped as a Clark County deputy was booking somebody else, like, you know, a driving incident, and this guy's pulled up and tried to take some photos of it, and for whatever reason, the deputy thought that the photographer was aiming a gun at him and has shot him. So,
That's tricky because I suppose a tripod depends if the tripod was open or not and how it could be pulled out. Because occasionally I've gone through the streets of Melbourne holding tripod and camera.
Yeah.
And I've thought, ooh, if I'm holding this the wrong way, I could be mistaken, in the dark and gloom as holding more than a camera. So, yeah, we'd have to have a good look at that one. And it's just one of those be careful type of jobs. If they were interconnected to each other. But then again, you sort of worry about, and I guess it's not Australia, but police in the US are extremely worried about people with guns, you know.
Yeah.
There's thousands of people are killed there every year
by
gunfire. So, yeah, it's about being conscious of your surroundings and what you're doing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's pretty hard for us to judge, but a bit scary.
Yeah, and I guess you got a feel for the photographer. It was just trying to do his job.
Yeah.
And probably wasn't expecting that kind of reaction from the copper. And as it says in the story, you know, the copper has opened fire, hit, what's the guy's name? Andy Grimm, hit him
That's
in the
right.
side, and he's fallen to the ground, and the copper has come over and gone, oh, man, you know, I thought that was a gun, you know.
Yeah.
So, but they're saying they're expecting him to make a full recovery, but, geez, rough.
Well, the other point they made is that the policeman didn't call out first.
Yes. Yeah. So, it's just shoot first, ask questions later.
Yes. So that's that's probably the bigger issue.
Yeah. You'd like to think you'd be given some warning or at least questioned as to your motives before, you know, being shot at. Anyway.
Absolutely.
And the last one from Steve Peters, and David, you were going to present us with a similar story. Photos of cameras and lenses that got destroyed by the solar eclipse. Wow.
So. People don't realize how powerful that sun is. And when you put a lens in front of your camera, it concentrates the rays. And I know that in the American press and the American podcasts and things, they're putting out lots of warnings about, well, if you're going to take a photo, you've got to have the right gear in front of your lens or you could get into a bit of trouble. There's a 17 Mark II shutter that was burnt.
Yeah.
There's a shot there of the aperture blades on a lens melted.
Yeah. Well, the very last one, I don't know if you've seen the last one, an $11,500 Canon EF 600 F4 IS2 lens had its aperture blades completely destroyed by the sun. Ooh, that's gotta hurt. That has gotta hurt. Goodness.
And I bet insurance wouldn't cover that one.
Probably not. Probably not.
And particularly, you know, F4 is a pretty open lens at 600 mil. Yeah. That's serious poo.
Yeah.
Jingo. That does not, that looks like one sick puppy.
I don't think that's coming back.
Yeah, that's right. I think in this story, and it's also in DP review, I've got the same story, and I think the point they made is that the lens rental company said there were very few that came back like this. Most people did the right thing. So yeah, right. That was fine. But, yeah, just a few people and a few lenses, kabang.
I just cannot believe that people would be, well, I don't know. I suppose the thing is that a solar eclipse doesn't happen very often. So it's not like there's anyone still around who, well, I mean, there probably are still a couple of photographers around who were shooting in 1977 when the last one occurred. But, you know, the last one occurred here in the Southern Hemisphere. I don't know if that would have been visible from the US, but, you know, there's probably, it's one of those things where you don't have many opportunities for prior experience. And so maybe.
That's right.
Maybe we need to cut some of these guys a little bit of slack for their error because, you know, it's not something they did last week and they should have known better. They've never experienced it before. But you would have thought there were plenty of warnings around leading up to the event. You would have thought that people would have been smart enough to at least heed the warnings.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is it's tricky is that when you're in the eclipse, it's fine when it's total.
Yeah.
It's soon after and just before and you could have been caught out and not closing things down, you know, once the Bailey beads show up, that's when you need to take one quick shot and then, you know, point away.
Right.
So that could easily have been it. But we will judge as to whether they've learnt because haven't they got another eclipse in very similar parts of America in the, I think it's 2024, 2026. 28.
Yep.
So we'll see if they've learnt. make a note of it.
Maybe we need to bookmark all of these photos and repost them around about, you know, a month out. Okay. Remember last time? Don't do that again. And Adam sent us one story about the Lily drone. Now, the Lily drone, for those who don't recall, was a Kickstarter project that was meant to get off the ground, if you'll pardon the pun, in 2015. They took a heap of funding from, you know, people who put money in. And this was a drone that could allegedly, you know, take off from on water. You could throw it up with your hand and it would just take to flight and then track you wherever you went. And for months and months and months and months and months, they did not deliver and were not able to deliver a product. It eventually ended up in a massive lawsuit where people who had put money in tried to get their money back. I think the original company ended up about 34 mil in the hole due to the lawsuit. And a new company has now taken over the name and the branding rights, but not the IP. So Mota Group, M-O-T-A, has purchased the branding and marketing rights, but not the actual patents and technology for the drone itself. But they are releasing a drone just with the Lily name. So how closely it will resemble the original Lily will remain to be seen. So
you would wonder if Lily had got such a bad name, why would you take the same name?
I guess because of the promise of what it was meant to be.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess there were probably a lot of people who were excited about what the Lily drone promised who didn't put money in and so haven't got the bad taste in their mouth about the brand. Certainly those people who did put their money in might be a little bit, you know, once bitten, twice shy.
Yeah.
But those people who didn't actually get around to putting money into the first and failed project probably still have great memories of the videos that they saw of what the Lily drone promised. And so for those people, maybe, you know, launching another drone product with that name might still attract a few people who, you know, were originally interested in it. That's my guess.
Yeah, that would be. I'll stay on the skeptical side of that. I mean, it looks like it folds up very well,
yeah,
and all that. But you know, you'd think you'd change it, the name slightly, or something like that. I mean, what they're showing here is neatly compact. It's very sleek.
Yeah,
it's a matter of course of how it performs.
Yeah,
I think that'll ultimately decide whether it's a. It's going to be a goer or not. It's a pretty tough market out there at the moment for brands.
Absolutely.
They're competing like Billio, and they're you know, the technology's jumping forward quite rapidly.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. All right, and you had a story that you threw in at the last minute?
Yeah, there was just the one more, and this was just one of interest.
Yeah,
and it's the one on Petapixel, and it's called "Cameras Capture What It's Like to Fly Through the Eye of Hurricane Irma." So it's very, very current.
Wow,
Irma is still beating. It's 50% more powerful than the hurricane that hit Texas.
Wow, that's
and
scary.
It's got, yeah, it, very scary. I think the Texan one was pretty bad because it brought all the rain, an unusually high amount of rain afterwards.
Right.
Not just the wind.
Yeah.
But this depicts what it's like to fly on one of the NOAA, that's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration of the US, where they do a lot of weather research. So they're flying a plane directly into the hurricane and through the eye. And there's a couple of really interesting videos showing them the plane jiggling around and then going dead smooth, sitting in the middle of the eye.
Wow.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
I was reading up about Irma today and, you know, because there were to be honest, I don't follow the news a whole lot, and I saw a reference on Facebook from a friend or a work colleague about Irma, and I was like, what's Irma? So I went and Googled it and went, oh, Hurricane Irma, okay, right, and started reading up about it, and it was saying that this is a Category 5 hurricane, and Category 5 is as extreme as it gets, and they were saying, you know, why is there no, you know, category above that? And it's because when you read the description for what a Category 5 hurricane is, it's biblical in its ferocity. You know, they're saying power will be lost and will not be established for months. Any building, you know, constructed with a wooden frame is going down without fail. They've measured consistent wind speeds, like not peaks, not bursts, but consistent wind speeds of 295 kilometers per hour. That's consistent.
Then there's
peak bursts that are faster than that. Yes.
Well, the other bit that was on the news tonight is that there's another one brewing right behind it.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Wow.
So there's yet another one that's just starting to build to go through the Caribbean on a not dissimilar course either.
Wow.
So it's because the ocean temperature is quite warm. And this Irma started over near Africa.
Right.
It's gone right across the Atlantic.
Wow.
And the point at the moment, I think the Caribbean, that they build with sea temperatures have got to be 26 degrees or more.
Right.
In the Caribbean at the moment, it's 26 degrees going down 100 meters.
What?
Yep. So it's 26 degrees in the Caribbean at 100 meters below the surface.
Wow.
So it's warm.
That's good scuba diving weather.
Right, start your scuba diving, you end up on the other side of just in Namibia and doing a bit of scuba diving up the coast of Namibia and
end up
come out, oh, it's Florida.
Yeah. Wow, 26 degrees, 100 meters down.
Yeah, pretty scary stuff.
Wow, that is crazy. All right, mate, well, good to chat. You got a book review? Or do you want me to run one of the pre-recorded ones?
I think run one of the pre-recordeds.
Okay.
Will be the easiest one.
I can do that.
Shoot. Yeah, so you got much coming up for the week?
No, not at this point. It's Thursday night as we're recording this. Tomorrow night I'm off to see an Australian artist by the name of Tim Wheatley, who I only discovered a week ago. He's got a new album out called Pillar to Post, and it has blown my socks off. I have been flogging it to death all week, and it turns out he's doing the album launch for it or one of the album launch shows for it here in Sydney tomorrow night. So I'm going along to that. And this was one of those things that Google Play recommended based on other artists that I'd liked and listened to. And I just, yeah, every now and again, I give some of those recommendations a spin because you just never know what you're going to find. And this was just one of those gems that I heard it and just went, wow, this is awesome. So, yeah, going to catch him tomorrow night and then heading up to the Blue Mountains for Saturday and Sunday morning to my mate Dave's place. We're going to be recording some music. And Max is off at Cadets this weekend, so we'll come back home midday Sunday and about the same time that Max is ready to come home. So, yeah, that's our weekend. And other than that, then it's just back to work. So. And you? You shooting much?
Well, I haven't been shooting much, although this weekend I'm giving the Big G a hand.
Oh, cool.
So I've been helping Glenn put together the psychotic break at Ararat.
Nice.
So I've been able to help him with some of the local contacts.
Yep.
But he's done all the heavy lifting. And, boy, preparing and putting together a workshop is hard yak. You've got to get the sites for the shoots. You've got to organise models. If you've got a group of people coming through, there's accommodation, and you need it in a certain way so you get the group, you know, gelling together, getting meals organised, costumes organised. It's hard work.
Absolutely.
So hats off to him to put that together. It's a lot of work, and just having that bit of an insight and giving him a hand has really been valuable. So, yeah, cool. I'm off to give him a hand and hoping for an interesting weekend. So there's some shoots in the Asylum, in the Great Western Cellars with all the champagne bottles and cobwebs.
He posted a sneak peek of those tunnels on Facebook through the week, and it looks awesome.
Oh, yeah, they're pretty amazing. And we may have lined up a yard of old, which has got old trucks and old vehicles in it as well.
Nice.
If the weather comes good. So so that's the other thing. You're balancing off something, particularly if you've got some inside and outside shooting, you've got to balance off the weather.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it looks like to be a very exciting shoot.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing the images.
Well, you might be able to critique Glenn's.
Yeah, I can imagine how that'd go down.
Return the favour.
Yeah, exactly. All right, mate. Well, enjoy that. Enjoy that weekend, and we will we'll speak with you again soon.
No problem. Catch
up. All right. Catch up with you. And now we'll go to David Marland with a book review for something different. What do you got for us, David?
Thanks, Bruce. You may think or know somebody who thinks that being a combat photographer is a glamorous job. Gary Ramage, a current Australian press photographer, has written an autobiography simply called The Shot. Well, not simply called it. It's got a pre-title. Do whatever you have to do, just get the shot. For starters, the style of the book is very similar to A Fortunate Life by A.B. Facey, or Jaeger by Chuck Yeager, a very straightforward and down-to-earth telling their tale and their life. The blurb on the back of the book is a not-too-bad description of what's inside. As a war photographer and former soldier, Gary Ramage has been in and out of just about every conflict zone that Australia has been involved in over the last two decades. He's been embedded with troops, lived, eaten and slept beside them, through good times and bad, through rocket attacks, firefights and funerals, from photographing mass graves in Kosovo to being under rocket attack alongside Aussie soldiers in Afghanistan. He's been there and documented it. It takes a special grit to be a combat photographer. It's an extreme and dangerous job. Risk comes with the territory. This is a high adrenaline, sometimes moving, sometimes laugh out loud, funny, an entirely gripping story of a man who's living an extraordinary life, documenting some of the most confronting and moving moments in international conflicts. The entirely gripping, to be honest, is not a bad description. I found at some points very hard to put this book down. Above all, it's given me a real insight into the backstory behind the daily news photographs we tend to very much take for granted. It's not all gung-ho and derring-do. There's an inscription below Gary's dedication to the book, and it simply says, "There are things I have seen that I cannot unsee." And like this, there are reflective parts of the book about failed relationships, about the pressure to get the shot, and the toll this takes, let alone the things that he has seen, things like mass graves, the medical evacuation of the wounded and dying, both soldiers and civilians, but even to ICE addicts in Perth hospitals. From a photographer's perspective, there is the classic reiteration of get your technical training right first. Get that embedded into your muscle memory so you can focus on the picture, especially if the opportunity, as it very often is in Gary's case, only a split second. I found this a very good read and I really recommend it. I think it would be especially useful for a person who thinks that this type of photography would be fun and an exciting gig to do, something they could make a career of. I think this is a sobering reminder that, yes, it's got the adrenaline, it's got the risk, but the risk you don't see is the toll it takes on you. Booko has The Shot by Gary Ramage. It was published in 2016 by HarperCollins, and they've got it from $21.50 to $44.65. Cheers.
Nice one. Thank you, David. That would be, yeah, as you say, not all glory. More gory than glory, probably. Yeah, that would be a challenging lifestyle to keep up with, and I don't know how long you'd want to do that for. I guess there are guys that, you know, do it for their whole lives and, like Kappa, give their lives to it, literally. But yeah, wow. Okay, thank you. That was great. All right, that will do it for another week, and until I speak with you next, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.